Hello, good afternoon. You're very welcome to Liveline. I hope you heard me the first time. Anyway, did you know at any one time in the United Kingdom, an estimated 17,000 households are at loggerheads over high hedges? And this can often lead to violence between neighbours. And in at least one case, murder. 20 years ago, retired Environment Agency officer Landis Borden was shot dead after an alleged dispute over a Leylandi hedge. Which apparently are taking over Ireland. Jerry McHugh. Jerry, good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Joe.
Can you explain, likewise, we're on the radio, as you know, Jerry. Can you explain Can you explain what the Leylandi is? I'd say people know it when you describe it.
Well, I have some Leylandi trees myself, which I have sorted out without any murders at all. And they can grow to 70 feet high, that's 25 metres, in 30 to 40 years. They're very, very shallow rooting, and, you know, I have six or seven of them that need to be moved, and I'll do it myself probably, or else the electricity crowd will do it. They're 30 feet above the electricity wire, which is 20 feet off the ground. So that'll give you an idea of the kind of a handling they are. And they did that in 30 to 40 years, so that could cost, you know, it would cost thousands just to remove two or three of them, I'm told, by, you know, people that have tried to get it done. So that's what you're into. I have my own methods of dealing with them without getting into any of that trouble, but they've destroyed neighbours. They're actually, I call them a weed and they're not a tree at all, to be honest. They shouldn't be planted anywhere. Wow. No matter what you plant, you shouldn't plant them.
Don't plant the Leylandi anywhere.
No. And what I...
But they grow up into a don't they grow into a lovely cone shape, tall cone shape, obviously if they're looked after.
They do if you look after them and look after them well, but some of the frosts that have happened lately have wiped out lovely hedges that were quite good. There's a golden coloured one, you know, there's a golden coloured one which grows slower, but they're very fast growing, and I mean even to get a guy like a gardener to keep them cut for you will cost you a bleeding fortune per month.
Yeah.
You know, my recommendation, anyone's having trouble with them, you should go in when they're on holiday or something like that, drill them and put Roundup into them, and that will get rid of them. I did it with the chainsaw.
Jerry, you can't do that, can you?
I know you wouldn't be supposed to do that, yes, I know.
What are you saying?
It'll be better than having a mortar on your hand.
But you're saying you drill a hole into the center of the
tree or the plant when they're not too big.
Yeah.
And just pour some Roundup into them and get someone who knows what they're doing. They won't get it on their hands, that type of thing. I it's not something you would lightly do, but if I was sitting beside someone who wouldn't, who insisted on growing them on up, that's what I would do. And I mean, they'd have to be breaking the law and everything else, I'm sure, you know, but...
But when they're young trees, are they not lovely, Jerry?
No, I planted two on the... My father planted these ones. He planted a couple on the side of the lane and they healed over. They only root very shallow, maybe a foot deep. But the wind brought two of them over. It took £300 worth of stones just to fill the hole that they left behind. They will take a wall out of it. They'll take fences out of it. They'll fill all your gutters with pine needles about four times a winter. You'd need to be clearing those.
Good God.
I'm not joking. You know, they do the roofs the same. And they're an absolute horror if they're anywhere near. They shouldn't be within at least 100 metres of any house. And far further, I wouldn't plant them for any reason.
But people in where are you living, Jerry?
I'm in Fermanagh.
Oh, you're in Fermanagh, okay.
There was a time when everybody thought they were great and you got them for very little. It cost very little to buy them, but they're lovely when they're small, but now...
And people buy them... Well, there's lots of them in suburbs. Why do people buy them in suburbs? Is it for privacy?
I suppose they create a shield for you. They keep, you know, you'll not see the neighbours quick, but they get out of hand in the matter of... You know, they're weaving about in the wind and they will break... The fences, they'll break anything else you have near it. I wouldn't tolerate them beside me if it was mine. I just, unfortunately, that's the way I'd look at them. People might frown on that as a method of doing it, but it's the only sensible option.
People buy them as windbreakers.
They buy them as a, maybe a windbreak they will do, but if, you know, if they're in an exposed area, they'll do that for a while, and then the wind will either burn them, kill them, or the frost will kill them, you know.
So, and where are your Leylandis? Are you on a farm, Jerry?
I'm on a farm.
And yeah. Where are your Leylandis planted?
Well, they're planted along a wall, which was a silo wall, and it was 18 inches thick, which is nearly half a metre wide.
Yeah.
They have demolished those walls just by their movement alone. They've demolished the walls completely. They're threatening the electric wires, which is right beside it, and they're threatening my shed, which is on the other side of it. So I went up on them last year myself with a harness, and I cut some branches off them, but you're taking your life in your hands trying to do even that.
And do you have any idea how much it would cost to bring in a tree surgeon and take them down?
To bring in a tree surgeon, well, I'm not saying what it'll cost mine, because it'll not cost that, but if someone had them at any sort of height above them in the vicinity of their house, I was told by a guy who brings oil to me here that he was asked £3,000 for removing just two of them.
Wow.
So that'll let you know.
1857-15-815-joe@rte.ie. Given that you're in the jurisdiction of Great Britain and Northern Ireland, Jerry, the law apparently is different, and there is now a provision in the Anti-Social Behaviour Act. There's now a provision that you can instigate, which are local authority, complaints about Leylandi trees, and they have the power in England and Wales to have the hedges reduced in height. And in May 2008, UK resident Christine Wright, as she was right in the end, won a 24-year legal battle to have her neighbour's Leylandi trees cut down for blocking sunlight to her garden.
Yeah, well, if she'd lost that battle, look what it would have cost her. My methods far cost absolutely nothing, or very little of it. I wouldn't bother going to the law, but I do take, they're an antisocial tree. I mean, maybe they should be deemed antisocial.
Should they? Well, if they're antisocial, why have they been sold in every garden centre in Ireland?
Well, there you are. They're a great seller. People, they'll grow up quick, and they'll cover out your neighbour. If you don't like your neighbour looking over at them, they'll cover them out within 6 years. Anyway, you'll have high trees. But what's beyond that is just, I know, because I've seen them. I've seen them in all parts of, we'll say, Enniskillen and all of that. And I know that devastation they cause. And people are afraid to touch them because it's the neighbour. But, you know, I've always recommended those. Not very nice recommendations that I give, but that's what I would do.
But do you think they should be banned?
I think they should be banned in suburbs. Certainly should be banned in housing areas. Absolutely.
There's plenty of
lovely shrubs. There's plenty of by a herbaceous, I suppose, hardy varieties, that kind of thing. Because even they get out of hand in your garden, and you'll know. Any of those garden guys will tell you what it costs just to keep them dug up and removed and moved on. And you know,
okay, I'm talking to Jerry McHugh. Jerry wants to tell people that he believes Leylandi trees are a weed, and people are mad to plant them anywhere at this stage. And he thinks they should be banned because they grow. They look lovely initially. They're cone-shaped green trees, obviously, but they grow incredibly tall in an incredibly short space of time, and they can root anywhere, and the roots fly in every direction, and they can root on bad land, and that's why they've become very popular. But as I say, there's disagreement over Amanda Gallagher, 51550 Marchant, that's the text number. Amanda.
Hello, Joe and Jerry.
You're listening to Jerry. You're only across the border. You're there in Sligo.
I am, but I probably still get the residue of his Roundup. I am shocked. Jerry, you should not be advising people to drill holes and put Roundup into the roots of trees. Do you know what? You're saying that Leylandi should be banned, Jerry, but Roundup, seriously, Roundup has caused so much devastation. Did you see the case in America? The school caretaker was using Roundup. He was awarded $400 million, but it's too late for him. He is covered in tiny tumours, Jerry. I have this thing I think Belgium and Brussels, Roundup is banned, Germany is banned, but of course, little old Ireland, we can walk into our garden centre and our hardware stores and buy it. I'm just so sick and tired of seeing men with the thing on their back, spraying the Roundup everywhere. in public places, the county councils even use it.
Oh, do they?
So it's an absolute national scandal that we're still using Roundup by Monsanto, who, do you know what I mean? Like, they're, okay, they're being sued.
But, well, Amanda, tell us how bad it is.
How bad is it? Joe, it kills the weeds. Right, you put Roundup outside your gate at the weeds, right?
Mm-hmm.
The couple of weeks later, everything is a dead-looking orange-brown dead,
okay,
right?
Yeah.
So it's in the air, Joe. So the men are going around. I'm not saying, I don't do it anyway. I haven't seen many women with the thing on the back, the spray pack. But I mean, I did say to my husband, I banned him totally from using it. I see people in county council workers at the roundabouts where people are walking with buggies. The county council, they're probably oblivious to what's going on. The county council man is spraying to get rid of weeds. Someone needs, like, the
TV. Jerry did say don't get someone professional if you want to use Roundup, but I presume, what are you saying, you can't even touch it?
I would say, Joe, for nobody to touch it, to research, to look at other countries.
No, but I mean, it is being sold in shops, isn't it?
Yes, okay. It is.
To physically touch it, don't let it get on your hands.
Oh, don't let it. Yes, Joe, of course. You'd have to be suited up to use it. But if you think about it, it's being sprayed in our communities. And where is the residue going? Where is it blowing? This is why this man was awarded so much money in America. He was a school caretaker. And there was so much incidence of cancer around that
Jerry,
area.
Jerry, I think it's called Paraquat, isn't it? And Roundup or whatever. Yeah, Jerry, has it any other uses on the farm?
Well, I take everything that Amanda is saying. I'm very anti. I'm anti sprayers on the farm. On my own farm, I don't use any sprayers hardly at all from what I used to do. But I do know that the councils and people like that have been going around trees for their saving their bother. But, I mean, it's used in some of the other countries, like some of your bigger countries, food countries, just to kill off the tops of of, we'll say, potatoes and whatever else, just so that they can do it. You know, grain, you're getting that in your food. So there's a far bigger issue happening there.
Okay.
You're getting it back in your cornflakes, you know.
And is there a campaign in Ireland demanding to ban Roundup?
Joe, I was thinking of launching a campaign recently. Fluoride is another issue, but Roundup, I'm always saying to my husband, how in this 2021, when other countries have it banned outright, and people are getting awarded big claims for cancer.
Okay.
How are we
Amanda, Amanda, God forbid, if a child drank a sip of it, what would happen?
Oh, well, finished, Joe. Finished.
Dead.
It should be a banned substance. And, I mean, the county council needs to really look.
Okay, stay there, Amanda. Your line is running all over the place. But stay there, and I'll take a break in a minute, but we'll improve the line. But Rosemary, good afternoon.
How are you, Joe?
Oh, you're in a mess, aren't you? Where are you based, Rosemary?
Oh, well, I'm in Enniscorthy now. I'm out in the country, all right, but it's just my father-in-law, in his wisdom, planted Leylandii all around the house for, you know, privacy.
Okay.
A number of years ago. But that's grand if you keep it low and maintained. But it sort of has grown a little bit every year, and my husband, it's a nightmare for him. He's up trying to maintain it and everything like that.
Are you sorry you planted Leylandii?
Well, I am. I wasn't around at the time. But we have trees at the back, and they've gone huge. So there was a storm about 4 or 5 years ago, and they all went down like dominoes.
Okay.
So we had to get the guy's tree surgeons in to remove it, and it was very expensive, but I mean, there's anything we could do because we're an eyesore, you know. So.
And what about the roots running everywhere?
Oh, the roots go in go into the pipes. I think they seek water, so they'll be drawn toward water, and they go in under everything, and the long roots, and it's just, they're actually quite ugly when they get tall. You
and
know,
they get out of control.
Out of hand. Like, I'm looking out at a neighbour's one here out the window. He must be about 50 foot high. And they're just ugly, you know. And I'm just waiting for them to fall down our direction.
Well, how much would it cost to get them taken down?
Well, it cost us I think it was between 4,000 and 5,000 it cost us to get them removed properly.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, and
can they be used as firewood or anything?
Yeah, we actually did. Yes, we did a deal with the guy. Sometimes tree surgeon needs to take them away, but we ask that we keep it, and we seasoned it over the years, and we have been using them.
But you're saying if you, I know you weren't there when it started, but if you had it all over again, Leylandi low.
My husband curses every year he has to cut the hedge because it's starting to spread as well. I mean, it's, at the top, it's about 4 or 5 foot wide as well. It grows out as well as up, so it's nightmare. But anyway.
Okay, Rosemary, thanks indeed. In the sunny southeast, Tony Anderson, Joe at RTE.ie, Leylandi. You're saying you would lay them, you'd lay them on the ground and forget about them, never plant them.
I think they should be banned, Joe.
Why?
Sure, they're no good to anything. Like, there's no, I never saw wildlife living in them. Frogs or snails or anything can't travel under them.
Can they not?
I don't think so. I think they're actually poisonous to insects. They're a bit like what we have up here with the rhododendron. They'll look well as an ornament or something, but I don't think they're any way practical. I'd rather see a holly hedge or a thorn hedge or anything like that. Like, is there anything nicer than a nice white thorn now with the may out on the bushes and all? Mm-hmm. I was planting them things, I hate them.
And where are you based, Tony?
Just up here in the hills, up past Talla.
Oh, yeah. Where are you born, Abrina? Okay. But do trees not help our carbon footprint?
Well, maybe they do, but I couldn't see them. I suppose all trees probably do, but them, like, is there not enough native trees and natural, like, if we go back and look at what's growing in an area from years, like, mostly white thorn or holly. I think holly is a lovely bush and there's ash and all that. But these other ones that are just non-native, like, I think, anyway, you know, and...
Tony, what did you think of Jerry's idea that he let out of the bag? He said he was very careful with it, that he injects paraquat into a tree to kill it.
It's not actually paraquat, it's Roundup.
What's the difference?
Well, to tell you that Roundup is not poisonous.
Okay. Well, paraquat isn't it?
Oh, it's banned. It's completely gone, yeah.
Oh, is it? Yeah.
But Roundup is what they call it, glyphosate, I'm not sure the exact
I know the phrase, yeah.
Yeah, but like it's actually sprayed on crops, which I don't agree with either, but I kind of don't agree with any spray if we can manage to do without it. But all chemicals, like where are they going to end up down the road, you know? But some things are probably necessary. Like we have, as I said, mentioned the rhododendron, and I think if you look in Killarney and different places like that, something like Roundup is one of the only ways of getting rid of it. Because it's an invasive species.
And then what's the other one that people are going mad about? Japanese knotweed, is it?
Oh, yeah, well, sure. Like, how did it start along the roads? Like, you see signs where the county council's put up signs to say, don't touch this, it's Japanese knotweed, and it has to be, the only way they can do it is to spray it off, to get rid of it, because if a little bit of it gets on your boots or anything, I think it's probably like the black grass net that they're talking about.
Spread.
That's coming in, yeah, exactly. And sure, all them things that are invasive species, somebody probably thinks they'll look well, and we have a problem where people will dump out stuff on the hills where there's maybe somebody take clippings from a hedge in the garden and bring it out and dump it, and maybe a little bit of root or something. The next thing you see, these things starting to grow, which shouldn't be there. They're not native, and I think we've enough native species without bringing in other stuff, to tell you the truth.
Elaine, stay there, and I'll go back to Amanda as well. Elaine, good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Joe.
Leylandi,
yeah. Many years ago, about 40 years ago, I lived in a housing estate in Belfast, just outside Belfast. And we had small front gardens and a slightly larger back one. But one of my neighbours, who lived on a corner, so he had pavement down two sides of his garden, he planted the Leylandi as a hedge. And for about 5 years, he kept chopping the top of them off, right?
Yeah.
Year number six, the housing executive people came out and they'd take up the pavements, they'd take out the whole of the garden, because not only were the roots coming out and had broken the whole paving up, I mean, the paving was in bits, but they were going for the foundations of the house.
Wow.
He put that many in. Oh, they should be banned. They should be banned. They're an awful tree, and they're not a local tree. I agree with the speaker in front of me. They're not a native tree. They shouldn't be here, and they do dreadful damage. If anybody has got one in their garden, they really should seriously think of getting rid of it.
Like ASAP.
Oh, ASAP. Every year it grows. You may chop the top off, but those roots grow out and out every year and grow stronger and stronger every year. As I told you, I saw it. They broke up, completely broke up two pavements.
So you're saying even though you keep them chopped down yourself, you can't control what's under the ground?
No, you can't. Wow. You can't control
what's
under the ground.
And when the council came out, was it a big job?
Oh, it was. It was diggers and everything. The pavements were all...
Oh,
we
luck.
Had to go different ways. And he was absolutely mortified. Now, he was mortified. He was a very private man, right? Yeah. And that everybody, apart... The
well, he was hiding. He was hiding behind the trees.
He planted the Leilandi to stay away from everybody. And what he did, essentially, was everybody was talking about him and talking about what happened in his garden and all the rest of it. So it was kind of counterproductive.
Sounds
but, of course,
like...
I mean, nobody told him that when he planted them.
Oh, you're saying... No, get rid of them. Do you think they should be banned?
Yeah.
Okay. That's pretty.
I agree with the other speaker. Yeah. There's lovely native trees and holly and everything that you can plant. You don't need to bring in Leilandi.
Okay, before the break, thanks, Elaine. Paddy Lyon. Paddy, good afternoon.
Yeah. Joe Leilandi is a brilliant hedge that is maintained, okay?
Yeah.
And you have to understand, with trees can be like pets. Some of them don't always stay that small. But they're a brilliant hedge, right? They don't actually damage foundations. They grow along a wall and they grow out to the front of the garden. Okay?
Yeah.
There's a far more dangerous species out there. The butterfly bush, Buddleia. It has destroyed most buildings in Dublin. The Ivy Market has destroyed it. All the buildings, rooftops around Bagot Street are all in a heap over it. Buddleia, it gets into the root. It blows and lands on our wall. The roots take seed. Buddleia, the butterfly bush.
That's like the little white... Tips
it has
on
a purple. It's like lilac to look at, Joe. Right?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And that's the most destructive plant that you can see growing out of buildings, right? And I've done a job for an elderly woman years ago in Hagen's Court of Lad Lane, where the chimney and the roof came in on top of her. Okay. Now this is I've been talking about this for years, and no one's taken any notice about Buddleia, the butterfly bush, because it attracts the butterflies, but it's the most destructive plant you can get. It's in the front of houses, it gets in the roofs, it penetrates, goes down, and it'll knock a wall at 10 foot, it's a 10 foot apart, it'll just push it and keep growing and growing and growing, right? Now, Gramoxone is paraquat, that's a contact weed killer, right?
Okay.
Where the Roundup is systemic, which goes into the roots.
Oh, okay.
And that's the difference, right? Now, paraquat, it was Gramoxone, but they put a smell, a strong smell in that, so people wouldn't drink it, because it was like coke to look at.
And who'd be drinking it?
No, but years ago, people used to put it in bottles and put it in sheds, and it looked like Coke.
Of course, yeah.
You see, it was the same color as Coca-Cola, right? And people put it in sheds, like, you see, and what people actually...
If
the nozzle and the knapsack got blocked, they used to blow into it, right?
Okay.
And that'd be enough to kill you with it, you know, with the product. But on the can of Roundup, it says it has no known hazard rating, right? Now, I did a job a few years ago out in Clontarf, and we'd always tell people about if they'd animals. And so this woman said to me, is that harmful to animals? I said, well, Grandma Monsanto would say it hasn't, right? But I was back doing the woman's trees 5 years later and the dog was licking me. Right?
What does that mean, Paddy?
Well, it didn't kill the dog.
It didn't kill you either.
The dog was licking around him. Look, I don't push for it because it's harmful to bees, harmful to insects, right? But believe it or not, if you have a root that's causing problems going under your house or anything.
Yeah, but
like
I know you're saying the Buddleia.
Buddleia.
Buddleia. All right, Buddleia. Yeah, you're saying the Buddleia, but you don't plant Buddleia, do you?
Like, no, Joe, it blows in the breeze, so the seeds.
So how can you control it?
Well, the only thing you can control it, Joe, is what they don't want to use is Roundup, right? And people
when people see it on walls or roofs or whatever, do they think it looks nice?
They do, Joe. They don't know. Anyone in the garden, I proposed a few years ago about Buddleia, right, about Roundup, and I was... eating alive, for want of a better word, right? Because the gardeners love it for it attracts the bees and the butterflies, okay?
Yeah.
But what happens is when it goes to seed, it blows and it lands everywhere.
Okay.
It lands on the concrete wall, Joe, and the seed will penetrate the wall and it'll demolish the wall. I've seen it in the front of houses, Thomas Street, James Street, bag of street, chimney everywhere, Joe. It's rampant, and no one seems, no one, it's not lit like the Japanese, not weed. But I think this is as destructive as anything.
Yeah, but if you're saying someone might see it growing on their house and they might say to the neighbour, God, Bridie, your buddly is absolutely gorgeous.
Oh, yeah.
It looks nice.
Yeah, but Joe, when the roof starts to leak, okay, right, and you get down into, you have to follow it all to the end, you know, and that's, there's a house around here from Harnville Avenue, and photographs, Joe, on the website, right, and it lifted the top of the house, the whole top of the house, by 2 inches, Joe, right, a fairly new red brick house, fairly new.
And what do our botanic garden say about Budleia?
Well, they don't say, oh, they tell you that it is an invasive species. They'll all tell you that it's very invasive, okay, but it depends on where you come from, Joe. It's lovely if it's controlled, but as I say, it's great, isn't it? Joe, as I said, trees are lovely to look at. Trees are lovely once they don't affect you, okay? Now, Budleia is the same. It's lovely to see the birds and the wildlife enjoying the Budleia, but if it's in your roof, Joe, it's in you have a major problem.
Okay,
Joe, this land in the front of house, Joe, just sticks to it.
Say with us, Paddy, joe at rt.ie.
Yeah.
Talk to Joe on 1850 715 815. Talk to Joe on 1850 715 815.
And Joe at rt.ie. We're talking about Leilandi originally. That was a call from Jerry McHugh above in Lisnaski. He hates them. He thinks they're a weed. They're a massive tree which grows very quickly. People use them as a border for privacy, for wind or whatever, because they do grow so quickly and they can root anywhere. Bad land, need less than a foot. Fintan Convery. Fintan, what happened?
Oh, hi. Yeah, this is just a tale from about 15 years ago, whereby I sought permission verbally from a neighbour to trim a Leilandi hedge that they hadn't trimmed for about 4 years. It had grown from the normal hedge height of about 4 or 5 feet. It had grown up to about 16, 18 feet. And the long and short was they were a partnership of people who weren't a married couple, and they were selling the house. So I saw the sign go up for sale. Turned out they'd moved out since he had given me the permission. And just, I was... Another neighbour said, "Sure, go on, because you only trim the heads, don't worry about it." Nobody had the numbers or where they were. So I just went in and trimmed the hedge and kind of did a tidy up job in it. And they decided to take me to court for damage, trying to claim that I had damaged the value of the property for the sale of the house.
Oh,
and that rolled on for about a year of letters back and forth from solicitors and everything. And I ended up being brought to court and fined for trespassing.
My God, how much?
The trespass, I think it was about $2,500, maybe $3,000, just as a statutory fine for trespassing.
But you were only going in doing a neighbourly deed. A good.
I saw it in both ways, because it was neighbourly that it pulled the hedge down, or it cut it back from about 16, 18 feet. Down to about, it was 6 feet. The difficulty with Leilandi, as you see, it does grow very quickly, but it grows a very, very thick stem. I mean, it is a tree, really, you know? So you kind of need to have big saws and specialist equipment when it gets too high, you know?
Good point.
Which I can manage, I can do. And not everybody can. So I would just appeal to people, you know, just don't get it. But secondly, I mean, I would really appeal to garden centres, please stop selling it. Just stop selling this stuff, you know.
Okay. And have you met the new neighbour? Are you still living in that area, Fintan?
Oh, yeah, I'm still in the same house. The comedy was that by the time it got to court, the new neighbours had moved in and they actually pulled the whole thing out.
I forgot to.
So they had to come to court to try and verify that it didn't cause any damage to the price or the sale of the house. But because the whole thing had went through lawyers, it kind of got into the legalese system. I was just exhausted because at the start of the process, my wife had been diagnosed with breast cancer.
Yeah.
I had two children aged 5 and 7. I actually had to give up my job overseas to come back full time. So I spent a year without money. And this was just an opportunity because I said, look, I need to use my garden. I could be dealing with a terminally ill woman here. I have two small children. My garden faces south. Yeah. This Leylandi covers at least half of it due south. It puts the whole of my garden and my house in shade. I just need it for so we can at least the kids can go out and play while I'm taking care of my wife. And you know, the guy said, "Oh yeah, fine." But he was going to get back to me once he talked to his partner. But the truth was, they never did get back to me. I couldn't find them. I just said, "Okay, there's no big deal." And then all of a sudden, as soon as the job was done, solicitors' letters were being written demanding exorbitant sums of money for damages. You know,
that's the stress you didn't need. Yeah. I can tell you.
Not whenever you're bringing a woman back to health from breast cancer.
Well, I hope.
But it's just the element of people that are out there that there's everybody will just jump at any opportunity to.
But you think Leylandi should be banned?
I think it absolutely should be banned just from even the gardening. First of all, this is a suburban garden. It should be absolutely completely banned because you can't. Once it gets above 4 or 5 feet, you can't control it easily. You know,
Have the this windbreak privacy before they get out of control. But have the any do birds nest in them?
Pardon me?
Do birds nest in them? Have they any other function? Do animals shelter under them?
I believe not. I think you need to ask a bird expert. I know the birds enjoyed flying in and out of it whenever there was windy weather, but I've never seen a nest in a Leylandi hedge. I think there's something sterile about the environment that they create. They're a perfect windbreak and all that, but it's just, some gardeners call it the Black Death because it just creates so much shade and tension and problems, you know.
Okay. I hope your wife is okay, Fintan.
She made a full recovery, full recovery.
Like most
people. We've all grown up many years, you know.
Yeah, brilliant. Well done. Congratulations.
But it was a very nasty time.
I can imagine, because of a favour.
I believed it was in a favour.
Okay. Little did you know. Thanks, Fintan. Fintan Convery. Kath, good afternoon.
Hello.
You have a Leylandi.
Yes. And the house I'm in, it's there about 50 years, and we have absolutely no trouble with it at all. It's about 6 foot high, and we get somebody to cut it down, or to trim it every 2 years. And I think the farmer that phoned in, they let
Jerry.
Jerry, kind of, let it grow right up in the air, and then you're in real trouble because, you know, it's the trimming is the big thing, and you must get somebody to trim it like anything else. And other things cause more problems, such as maybe beech trees, if you let them go right up, or ivy. Ivy is causing much more trouble around my house rather than Leylandi. And it looks lovely, and it's stayed green, maybe a little tiny patch here and there, but it's just causing absolutely no problem whatsoever.
Okay, and how much, do you mind if I ask you, how much does it cost you to maintain them every year? At that
just I paid a man just €200 to.
Okay.
1 year it was less, and another year a little bit more, and I had to give him a little bit more.
Yeah, of course. Yeah, well done.
He does a nice job, and he just does it in a few hours.
Okay.
And we've had absolutely no problem whatsoever. It's great, causes great privacy, and I think the whole problem, I've seen it in another house I was in where the people don't. We had it there as well, and we did the same thing. Ours is looking very well, but some of our neighbours didn't cut theirs.
And what part of the country are you in, Kath?
The Midlands.
The Midlands. Okay.
Midlands. I did live by the sea, so it's same thing. No problem there, as long as we trim. And trimming was the main thing, and we kept it down to 6 feet, and it doesn't cause the ground or anything to rise up like the and the beech trees, yeah.
Okay, Kath, thanks indeed. James McGrory, Kath's in the middle, and James McGrory's in Donegal.
Hello, Joe, how are you?
Good, James. Many Leylandis have you got?
About 84, 85.
Wow. How high are they?
They're about 25.
And
I planted them when I built my house about 34 years ago.
Yeah.
As a perimeter, and I maintained them. They're developed into a hedge maybe 20 years ago.
Yeah.
And every 2 years or a year and a half, I get a professional in to do a professional job on them. And they're a fantastic job.
And how high are they now?
How high are they now? They're around 25 foot now. You've got to keep them maintained, to keep them cut back every year.
And you have them, all at the same height. Why is that? They're obviously ornamental, are they? They look well.
No. They form a hedge. They're by three sides of my site.
Okay.
They're really fantastic. Where I live, quite exposed. And in the early stages, I used to lose slits of my house, but since I got my hedge properly to the proper height, haven't had a problem with that.
So they stopped your house being blown away?
Well, no, it's a bit extreme that, but yeah, I've stopped me losing slits, put it like that.
Okay, stopped you losing slits. Okay,
but
James.
They are, you know, it's like everything else. You know, people, you wouldn't put laddies into a housing estate or where you have a lot of urban areas. They are really for the countryside.
Yeah.
And they're okay if you look after them properly, but you don't plant a tree and just let it go and just because it's not that they're really meant to be a hedge, really, than a wild tree.
Okay, good point. Thanks, indeed, James McGrory, above in Donegal. Mark Wilkinson is in Dublin 15, chairman of Crown.ie, as in trees, voluntary organisation. What's the line on Leylandi, Mark?
Well, we like to consider ourselves to be non botanically racist, Joe, so we wouldn't be on for banning it.
Okay.
But I do think there should be fairly strict planning regulations with regards to planting in their houses or planting in front of other people's houses.
So they are an issue. They block out light.
Oh, they are. They are definitely an issue. But
are they a neighbourly plant? Do you follow me?
No, they're certainly not a neighbourly plant. There's one thing that causes huge division, and I feel very sorry for, I think it was Fintan that went on there. That's a dreadful story that he had.
When he was trying to help the neighbor. And any virtues, any good side to the Leylandi?
Well, as far as I know, birds love nesting in them because they're quite a dense tree. But, Joe, the real reason I rang in was that there are so many other lovely choices. I've no Leylandi, but I've lots of beech hedges.
Lovely, yeah.
And I saw a Cotoni Aster the other day. And I saw Red Robin being used as a hedge.
Oh, lovely,
There's so many choices that are gorgeous.
So you'd say you don't want any tree banned. That's not in your DNA, your tree DNA. But you're saying if you'd say you wouldn't be encouraging people to buy Leylandi and plant them.
Well, I think that's the role for the planners, actually. You shouldn't. If it's almost like noise abatement. You should be able to complain to the local authority. And they should be able to intervene. Because if you cut out somebody's life, not very funny.
Okay. Say, Mark, and listen to Heather. Heather's in Galway. Lovely name, Heather. Heather, for the day that's in it. Heather, you don't like Leylandi?
No, I found that they attract flies.
Okay.
Apart from the roots and everything else. But you know what's even worse is eucalyptus. I see lots of people planting young eucalyptus. They look beautiful when they're young, but then as they get older, they're known as the rag tree, and their roots will carve up a roadway even.
Wow.
So from getting under people's foundations of their houses, deadly things.
That's what people worry about. And have you got any Leylandi, or did you inherit any?
No, I did have years ago, and I got rid of them.
Okay. Have you? And I presume you have no eucalyptus.
No, I wouldn't have a eucalyptus near any building. No.
And is there any in?
Even a roadway. I mean, if you travel, if you've seen what they do in Australia and in Africa, they grow them when they're away from properties and that. But they use them in Africa for electric poles. You know.
But has eucalyptus got a function? Does it?
Well, they're very attractive when they're young. They're very attractive. Lovely round leaves, lovely silver grey. But as they get older, the leaves change. They're long. It's a rag tree, commonly. And it looks like rags falling off a tree. And they go to 200 or 300 feet high.
Wow.
But then the roots are deadly.
And what about eucalyptus oil? And
well, they're going for that too, I suppose, you know.
Yeah, okay.
But where there's lots of land in Australia and land that's not much good, it's fine, but not here in this country.
Okay, Heather. Thanks indeed, Heather's in Galway. And isn't it the koala bears in Australia that love the eucalyptus, don't they? Is Damien, before the break, Damien, you're a tree surgeon.
Yeah.
Leylandi.
Yeah, weed tree.
get rid of it.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, everything has its place, like, but it's just, as people are saying, it's the handling and the height of them is where the expense comes in to get rid of them.
Yeah, but when you say everything has its place, it sounds like Leylandi is the only place for Leylandi is in the skip.
Yeah, but it can be managed as a hedge, show for, and it can be kept very well. You can see some lovely, well-maintained Leylandi hedges.
Okay.
But they seem to, after about 15 years, they explode into a tree if they're not managed at all. And the correct capability grown to 90 feet tall, and that's where the trouble starts.
So they're fine until they're teenagers at 15, and then they go out of control.
Exactly, yeah.
Like every 15-year-old.
Yeah. Yeah.
And Damien, to cut one down, say one of 60, 70 feet, that's 30 years old, is it expensive for you to cut it down?
Yes, Joe. Everything is about, you need a team of professional fellas.
So dangerous.
Machinery, you know, that side of the way. So that's where it comes. There's a lot of handling on it, Joe. Like, you might be able to manage to take one or two down a day, depending on the height. You understand me?
Wow.
Like, there could be anything from 5 to 7 tonne of stuff to get rid of. You understand me?
Good God. And how do you get purchased when you're on a Leylandi tree? How do you climb or mount it or position yourself?
We're trying professionally, so we harness the rope.
Harness, okay. Yeah.
Or sometimes it depends on the area. Sometimes you might have to use a hoist.
Yeah, that's what I mean. Yeah, God, I just think it's one of the most dangerous things. I know you're all protected in the harness, but I still think it's a dangerous job. Swinging out of a tree, unless your tires in the course, but it's swinging out of a tree, Damien.
That's the risk you take, Amy Joe.
Have you ever fallen?
No, thanks to God. Touch wood.
Have you ever touched wood and seen anyone else? Have you ever seen anyone else fall, God forbid?
No, don't want to either. No,
yeah,
no,
absolutely.
No, but that's what I'm saying. But Joe, again, I just advertise, you do need professional people to do what you do. Like, you go on to YouTube, it's full of idiots making mistakes, like, you know, but it's not for the faint hearted.
Well, chainsaws are lethal anyway when they're.
Make sure everybody's fully insured, you know. There is flyby nights going around, you know what I mean?
Yeah, good point, yeah.
But it's a job for professionals.
And do you work for yourself, Damien, or have you branched out?
No, for myself, yeah.
Just work for yourself, okay. What's the name? Do you want to give the name of your company? I don't mind.
The taxman will be asking me, Joe.
Okay. I'd say you'd be barking up the wrong tree, would you, Damien?
Yeah.
Where's Francis? Where's Francis before the break? Francis, thanks, Damien Walsh, tree surgeon. You have a house in Carlow.
It's my parents' house, Joe. Hi, how are you?
Good, yeah, good.
No, the point I wanted to make, you're asking about birds nesting, and they definitely nest in the Leylandi hedgerow.
Oh,
we have a mixed hedgerow around, we have beech hedgerow and a hawthorn, but between the house and the Christmas trees, we have a Leylandi hedgerow that's at least 45 years old. My dad planted it, and he keeps it, you know, very well pruned.
Yeah,
but there's definitely blackbirds, sparrows, every type of bird in it. But just to remind people that if they are removing the Leylandis, and I know people hate them, that please don't remove them till the end of September into October when the birds have finished nesting, because.
Well,
I can just tell you, they're definitely nesting.
Yeah, well, isn't there a ban on removing hedges during the summer?
Because it still happens. And a lot of people don't realise it either. You say to people, I didn't realise.
But you see, it still happens because, I don't know who does it, I've seen it done in one particular place. It was horrific what was done. It was done in the middle of summer, but there's no comeback.
Who do you complain to
when all the birds are gone?
You can complain to everybody in the council, but people don't get fined, and it is awful. And I remember in Kilkenny 2 years ago, somebody bought a farm, they removed every tree, hedgerow. It was shocking, it was miles of hedgerow. And to do that, it's so ignorant, and it's awful, and it's just such an awful thing to do. And people should just please replant more hedgerows, plant more trees, because that's what we're trying to do in our area and community. And it's still important, but definitely, I didn't think Leylandi was still sold as the hedgerow.
But if
you are to remove it, just please, not till the end of September into October, because think of the birds, and it is great shelter, and if it is maintained, it does look well. But that's the most important point. Think of the birds if you're going to remove it, please.
Okay, Francis, well said. 45 years ago, planted by your dad.
Yes.
I hope he's still alive and well and still pruning. Great.
He loves it. He's 70 and he still goes out pruning every year and he does a good job.
It's a beautiful hobby, a gift of a hobby. Thanks indeed, Francis. Joe at RT.ie.
Okay, thank
thanks, Francis.
Talk to Joe on 1850 715 815. Talk to Joe on 1850 715 815.
Laura Watson, good afternoon.
Good afternoon.
Laura, tell us about Stephen. First of all, condolences. He was in prison in Dublin and just under a month ago, April 27th, you got the news that he had died. Tell us about him. What age was he?
Stephen was 20 years old.
Mm.
He was full of life. He had the biggest smile. He was such a gentleman. He was a mommy's boy.
Mm. Laura, tell us how you found out that Stephen had died in prison.
Two guards came to the house to inform us that Stephen died in prison. It was awful, tragic news for me and his dad to have to take in, straight away. Me and his dad were just devastated. You know, we thought a prison would be the best place for Stephen because he suffered with terrible ADHD.
Yeah.
Since he was a child, he suffered with hyperactivity and he had no concentration. So at the time we thought it was the safest place for not to place Stephen's bail and let him stay in there. And we thought it was a last resort for us to get help as parents. So we thought he'd be in a safe place. So it was just devastating news that we gave our baby to someone and they were supposed to take care of him. And they didn't give him back,
And Laura, you sound as if, and it's a terrible tragedy, such a young man, and he's in your only child as well, am I correct?
He's my only child, he was
So you sound as if when he was sent to prison, that he was, that you and his dad were relieved, at least you knew where he was, he was being fed, he could use the gym, maybe look after himself. Was that your feeling?
We noticed when he had more structure and routine, Stephen coped a lot better, so he was doing the gym and he'd have set times, he'd have to do things every day, clean his cell. He learned a little bit more from in there because Stephen had everything done for him, he didn't do much things for himself, so in there he did learn a little bit about cleaning his cell and cleaning his room and stuff. It was structure for him,
discipline. And was that his first time in prison, Laura?
No, to be honest with you, Stephen was a little bit of a handful, and he was known to Gardaí for drunk and disorderlies and stealing push bikes and things like that. Stephen was no angel. We had a problem with Stephen being in school from the age of 14 because he had no concentration, even if he tried to sit down and read something, Stephen, in 2 seconds. He wouldn't watch a film. He just had really lack of concentration from ADHD all his life. So it's really hard to get Stephen into something.
Yeah.
It was really hard to get him into structure. We tried so many things. We tried counselling, therapies, rehab. But after a few days, Stephen would just drop out. He never would put himself into doing anything like
that.
And
would he listen? Would he listen to anyone, Laura? Would he listen to you, his dad, his granny?
He was very close to his nanny. His nanny raised me with Stephen. She's a wonderful woman, and he was very close to her. He was very spoiled at home. He was the apple of everyone's eye. I had Stephen when I was 15. So he grew up with me. He used to say to me, Mom, but you're my sister.
There was only 15 years between you.
Stephen was my best friend. I really lost my best friend and everything in life. Devastating, and he has a whole big family that loved him and supported him very much.
An extended family.
And
was he on his own in the cell?
As far as we know, at first, when they came to tell us, we were just told he passed away.
Yeah.
And then 2 days later, everything went through my head. Did he commit suicide? Did something happen to him? And 2 days later, we were contacted by a liaison garda that's investigating Stephen's case. And he told me, at first, they told me that they tried to call a doctor for Stephen, and then there was nothing they could do.
Yeah.
And then it was only actually a week ago, the guard had told me that he was already gone when they came into his cell for morning breakfast. Okay. So that would be about 8:30.
Okay, so he
died. And they got to me at 11. They got to me at 11.
Yeah, so he died during the night.
He died during the night, and so I don't know what's legal there, like with sound checks and
stuff like that. Had he ever been in hospital before?
Stephen was a very, very healthy child. He was never sick. He never got the flu or bugs. Like, he had common colds and stuff, but he was very healthy, really fit, because he loved the gym. He was a very healthy kid. He was very lean and tall. He was 6'4".
Mm.
Like, everyone says he should have been like a model. He was so handsome, you know, blonde and blue-eyed. He was such a lovely kid. He had such a lovely manner, lovely manner. He was a gentleman. He'd hold his nanny's chair out for her, and he'd hold the door, like, even his mom. He was very close. All his friends said that even when they were still in bed, Stephen would still call around the house just to have cups of tea with their mom. He was shopping for their mom or help them clean the house. That's the way he was. He just loved to go in for our chat and a cup of tea, you know.
And
it was a lovely time.
And I know the Irish Council for Civil Liberties recently, six, 7 days before Stephen died, they issued a report saying that families were suffering because of the inadequate coroner system and long delays were being experienced. Have you been told when you might know what happened to your son?
We were told basically we have to wait a year to see what happens to him. Now, legally, we can get a blood test results, but that would take up to 6 months because of COVID related. In every other case, it'd be 3 months. So they told us it could take between 6 months and a year for the investigation into what happened, Stephen.
Well, the Irish Council for Civil Liberties report said the bulk of coronial work is carried out by part-time coroners who are dependent on limited administration staff and Garda investigators. And you were told it might be a year before you'll know what happened to your only child.
What happened? And
when he was in state custody.
When he was in state custody, we don't even know what time. As a mother, you remember the time your child was born.
Yeah.
And as a mother, you'd want to know what time your child has passed and what happened to your child. Was your child alone? There's so many questions that has gone unanswered. Like, me and John don't want any other parents or family to ever have to go through this again.
Yeah.
Because it's not right to anybody. It's not right to any family. My family is so upset. Like, I have 4 younger sisters that are all girls that grew up with Stephen.
Yeah, of course.
And And because they were so young when Stephen was born, they were only 10, 7 when he was born.
Okay, so you're like a little brother to them.
Yeah, like a little brother, because we never had brothers.
Oh, okay.
He was the apple of everybody's eye, It's so devastating. And if we could stop this for any other family to have to deal with anything like this, because you feel like you can't move on. And so many things go through your head.
But you say he was on remand in Cloverhill, was he entitled then to go to school? Or if you're on remand,
I think on remand there is a skill. But as I know, this is Stephen's third time in. He did a 3-month stint for no tax and insurance, and then he did another 3 months for break and probation in the last.
Yeah.
So in the last 3 years, he's been in 3 times. But in the last 2 years, there's been no skill or education because of the COVID.
They've been locked down
in their cells.
And education in prisons is just so important, so brilliant, but so important.
I reckon, because I've been through a lot as a child, and counselling helped me so much. And if they place counselling, well, obviously, there's a lot of males, young males, that deal with mental health problems, whether it's from ADHD, whether it's from autism.
Yeah.
Whether it's just from low self-esteem, there are so many, and there's not enough support or support systems in for families at home. So So say when they get out with the COVID, they can't get jobs because they have criminal records. So it's hard for them to get back into anything but crime again, which is really sad.
But you're saying to me, his sentences on each occasion were 3 months.
Yeah, and
sure, that's,
see,
why would anyone be sent to prison for 3 months?
His sentences, we felt, wasn't inadequate and wasn't enough. You know, like, we felt like even when Stephen was out, Stephen was actually out on probation this time. He actually was told if he did anything and was caught with anything, he'd do a year straight. He was, I think he was arrested in a stolen car the week before he took the phone. And they didn't even bring him back to prison to do the year where he was supposed to do a year straight. Like, so I don't know. I'd say it's more like the justice system that lets them down as well and lets parents down. Because we're obviously at our wit's end. We're really sick every night wondering where he is. Is he safe? Like, they haven't got driving license, these kids. They can't drive.
And were you, are you saying that you would have preferred if he got a year in prison?
I probably would have at the time because
you were at your wit's end.
Because we were literally at our wit's end. And he was still getting charge after charge, and they still did nothing about his probation. And I think probation is very important.
Yeah, absolutely.
It's important for them as people. And
you were hoping that the system would be much harder on him.
Tougher
on him. Tougher is a better word. Much tougher on him.
Tougher on him, because I suppose when you're at that stage, you think that's just the best, and them learning the hard way is going to make them want to change their life, you know. And it's sad because at 20, they're a class as an adult.
I know.
They have to make their own choice.
You're in an adult prison. I'm just thinking of his 24th would have been, within a week or so? Good God.
A week, 7 days. Yeah, and I would love to see him in a suit for his 24th. No, it's devastating.
Well, let's hope that you find out, as you say, as soon as possible. And I know the prison authorities would like to find out as well what happened to someone in their care. Laura Watson, condolences to you. Is Stephen's granny still with us,
Barbara, her name
is Stephen. Well, condolences to you and Barbara and his father.
Auntie Janet and Rhonda and Uncle Ivan and Aaron.
Who thought of him like a brother, you did.
No, he did. He was such a wonderful child, but you had just this laugh that lit up every room and smiled.
Well, God rest him. You've spoken so well about him. I'm sorry you had those misfortunes, but you've spoken so well about him. May he rest in peace, Laura, Stephen. Stephen Ryan Watson. Thank you, Laura.
Talk to Joe on 1850 715 815. Talk to Joe on 1850 715 815.
Leilandi, Mary, good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Joe.
How many have you got?
70.
How long have you got them?
About 25 years.
And how high did they grow?
Oh, God, I know they were about 15 feet. We were after trimming them maybe twice, the top of them. And then maybe a year and a half ago, we cut down one side of them because we put a hedge there, you know, so we're intending to take him out altogether.
And are you trying to get rid of them?
Absolutely, yeah. And, like, they seem to be all kind of withered inside in the middle of them.
Yeah. And is it expensive to get them removed?
Well, we're doing it ourselves.
Are you?
If we had to get someone, I don't know how much, God knows what to cost you.
So you planted them?
So he planted them himself, and we have all the tops taken off of them now.
But are you sorry you planted them yourself and himself?
I am now, I suppose, we should have looked after them better, maybe cut them down in the beginning. But I couldn't believe there's such stumps in them. My God, I never, ever thought they'd be anything like that.
Yeah, they're out of control.
Yeah, absolutely.
And what are they like when you cut them down? They're just the stumps.
Yeah.
They're not nice, are they, to look at?
Oh, they're not, no. I don't know, they'd be maybe 7 or 8 feet now, or
Wow.
So we'll just cut maybe so much off of them and then try and take out the root, the whole lot then.
Oh, wow, that sounds
a
nightmare.
It's going to be a lot of work. But
it is. Okay, Mary, thanks indeed. 51551, my chance.
Talk to Joe on 1850-715-815. Talk to Joe on 1850-715-815.
Today's programme is produced by Fergus Sweeney, research Richie Byrne, sound Mark McGrath, BCO Daniel Keating, and the series producer is Rebecca Meehan, and Ray Darcy will be on after this programme. But we wanted to finish the programme today by giving some space again to some of the many, many women who left messages this week about the menopause. And we couldn't do it every day for many other reasons, but we did it for over 2 weeks. And there are many support groups out there. We have put all their details up on our website. But the women who talked to us about the menopause, the lack of understanding, the lack of information, pleas for help and for kindness and for understanding, we weren't able to get to them all. Now, I'd also say to people, let us know how you get on when you do approach your medic or whatever again and say, can my issues be dealt with? 15% of the workforce, for example, at any one time are going through the menopause. So to finish today, this is a montage of some of the voices that came in on our WhatsApp message, voice message line this week.
Hi Joe, I have been listening all week to women suffering unnecessarily. I too suffered for years, and I asked my GP so many times for HRT and I was declined over and over again. My hair was falling out. I developed an anxiety disorder. I had sore bones. There was times I couldn't even get up in the morning. I was so sore. I got stomach issues, depression. Life was unbearable. I wasn't suicidal, but I just wanted to die. I was put on sleeping tablets, beta blockers, antidepressants. I was made feel like I was going mad. I begged and begged, and eventually I got HRT, but I was lectured about breast cancer. So I was on HRT for about 10 months. And at Christmas, I went to my GP because I developed two breast lumps. And what she said to me was, I knew the risks with HRT. I was devastated. It was making me feel like, because I went against my GP's wishes and went on HRT, that I actually deserved this. I was at the breast clinic this morning up in Cork, and it looks like it's not going to be anything serious, but I'm absolutely devastated the way I've been treated and made feel so bad about going on HRT, because it's the only thing that's actually changed my life around.
I am approaching my 57th birthday and I am 7 years into the menopause. While many women will go through the menopause, not all women experience the terrible physical symptoms. I have three sisters, two of which got zero physical symptoms and flew through the process, but my other sister and myself are certainly making up for the rest of them. Like many of the women I've listened to over the last few days, I get hot flushes. My sleeping pattern has gone completely, waking up on average just six times a night. If I get 3 hours consecutively sleep without waking up, I consider that a success. In 2017, 3 years after I started the menopause, my feet got very, very hot to the point wearing shoes was virtually impossible. I would wake up in the middle of the night and have to step into a basin of cold water to bring down the temperature of my feet. I now have to wear wider shoes, such as the impact it had had. As for vaginal dryness, my last smear test was in 2019 and it was excruciating. Thank God for the colposcopy clinic here, which came to my aid only after I took two courses of oestrogen pessaries. I'm also a migraine sufferer, which my migraines have increased twofold since I started the menopause, having an average of 8 migraines a month. Menopause is absolutely no fun.
Like so many women, I've been listening to your programme on the menopause for the last few days. I'm 58 and now believe I've been perimenopausal for the last 7 years. I suffered with heavy blood loss for 4 years, resulting in a D&C, but nothing abnormal was found. I was then sent to have a camera inserted due to digestive problems. Again, no abnormality found. I've had x-rays for arthritis. Again, no abnormality found. I've recently had all my bloods done, all normal, but I was told there was no need to check hormones as they don't prove anything. I am suffering with severe joint pain, especially in my feet and hands. I constantly use ice packs on my feet and bring them to bed at night to help reduce the pain. I wear hand splints and have spent a fortune on shoes, insoles, heel splints, etc., just to enable me to walk free of pain, but to no avail. I've been going to my doctor and asking for HRT, but there's always an excuse to try something else or refer to see someone else. Why are doctors treating women so badly with such little empathy and understanding? We want our lives back. Why do women have to suffer so much in this country? I thought Ireland had moved on.
I just wanted to share my story too with the menopause issue. I was not feeling myself in my early 40s after my last child was born. Tired, exhausted all the time, bad form, snapping, just not interested to meet anybody. Wanted to hide from the world basically. And tried to keep going, lots of crying, but tried to keep going as normal and people thought it was fine. Went to the doctor and she just said I should get more exercise. I said I was overweight. So I left in highly embarrassed, red face full of tears, and left to try and take care of myself. So I did that. I joined courses for a couple of months and that didn't work. So I'd go back to the doctor. I said, I've got weight. I can't seem to lose it. I'm tired all the time. She said, well, if you drank more water and you exercised and went out in the fresh air, and there's this class you should try. I lost weight with it, and I was like, right, okay. But I tried, I went out walking and did my best to keep going. But I was snapping with the kids, and I hid away from people. I didn't want to see anyone. And then I went to the doctor, and I was at my wit's end. I said, I'm at a point where I just don't want to be here anymore.
Hi, Joe. I think it's really important listening to all these amazing women on your show. Some of them who are on HRT, that they get this message. Some of them are still experiencing symptoms like hot flushes, anxiety, brain fog. And this means, Joe, that they simply aren't on the right dose of HRT. They don't have to go through those awful symptoms. They don't have to continue struggling with them. What they need to do is go back to their specialist or their GP and ask them just to tweak their HRT. And please, just to say to all the women out there, because you're all tuning in and you're hundreds and thousands to Joe, educate yourselves, ladies. Like, this is the beginning of such an amazing part of your life. It doesn't have to be the most terrible part of your life. And this is from Joanna in Swords. I'm perimenopausal and 47.
Can someone please explain why pharmacy shelves are stocked with Viagra, and yet so many women out there are unable to even get a prescription for HRT? Something needs to be done. Thank you.
Dear Joe, I was 30 years old. I hadn't had a period in a few months. I went to my then GP. He laughed when I said I had menopausal symptoms. I was suffering from night sweats and hot flushes all the time. He told me, go home, and I'll put you into the Guinness Book of World Records because you're far too young for all that. I was crashing and burning, and in the end it was my sister who demanded he do something. Eventually I found out it was premature ovarian failure that had pushed me into the menopause, and in the same breath he told me that I'd never have children unless it was through egg donation. I had a breakdown and attempted suicide. I'm 18 years now on a HRT patch, and I'll be on it for life. Men should be educated about this because it adds to the anxiety, this perception that we're cranky and emotional. Some have no idea how harsh this is on our minds and bodies.
And at Christmas, I went to my GP because I developed 2 breast lumps. And what she said to me was, I knew the risks with HRT. I was devastated. It was making me feel like, because I went against my GP's wishes and went on HRT, that I actually deserved this. I was at the breast clinic this morning up in Cork, and it looks like it's not going to be anything serious. but I'm absolutely devastated the way I've been treated and made feel so bad about going on HRT, because it's the only thing that's actually changed my life around.
But the thing is, I'm not depressed. The feeling of not being listened to, and right now, actually, I'm so angry that my 6 years of being depressed and sad and low and down and no energy and putting on this excessive weight, which I never did before in my life, could have been sorted, could have been fixed. This has affected my marriage, my kids, my friendships, my outgoing nature. I stopped. So it has controlled my life. I wonder, where do I go next? Because I get hot flushes and sweats at times. I'm having one right now, actually. Great. Yippee. Who do I go to get expert care? Because I just don't know. I hope all the women and the young women listen to this and have a better outcome. And I definitely won't let my daughter go through this. Thanks very much. Bye-bye.